Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan De Burka Butler is with us once again to bring us some stories from other parts of the world. Good afternoon,
Sean,
Jonathan.
How are you getting on?
Right, South Korea we're going to go to first. And a woman has been given an apology by prosecutors. Is that the case?
That's the crux of it, yeah. So this is a woman by the name of Choi Malja. So she is now 78 years of age. But she was 18 in 1964 when she was attacked by a man who was 3 years her senior. And this individual tried to sexually assault her effectively. So he pinned her to the ground and he stuck his tongue in her mouth. And she responded by defending herself and bit his tongue. And she managed to bite some of it off. Now, that sounds pretty gruesome, but when you're being attacked, I think sort
fair
of
enough.
Fair play to
her.
She bit off 1.5 centimetres of it. And subsequently, she got away. Subsequently, the two of them were brought up before court, right? So he was prosecuted. He was sentenced to 6 months in prison, which was suspended for 2 years. And that was for trespassing and intimidation, which would indicate that he had gone onto her property of some nature in order to carry out the assault. But there was no charge of sexual assault or attempted rape or anything like that. So he got 6 months suspended for 2 years. She, on the other hand, got 10 months suspended for 2 years. And the judge in that case, or the court at the time, basically said that she had exceeded the reasonable bounds of self-defense and was charged with grievous bodily harm. And so she got the 10 months. Naturally, life went on. She was a bit annoyed about this at the back of her head. And then in the 2010s, shall we call them, when the Me Too movement came about, she was kind of inspired by that to launch an appeal, effectively, and she submitted the papers back in 2020. That was a full 56 years after the attack. And she got campaigners behind her and the like. It was rejected at the lower courts, this appeal. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And in 2023, the Supreme Court said, OK, the retrial can go ahead, so we'll listen to your appeal or whatever. And last week, that opened, or at least the hearing for that opened, and the prosecutors, or the Crown prosecution, or whatever you want to call them, the state prosecution, turned around, and in their opening statement, they said, look, we apologise for what we did, and we would like the court to consider quashing this particular conviction.
Okay.
And it looks like that's what they're going to do, but we're not going to find out until September the 10th. You would have thought that they might be able to
do it on the spot.
Yeah, just do it on the spot. It looks like they will, but we're not going to find out until after next month.
Yeah. Interesting, though, I had to go all the way up to the Supreme Court before the prosecution went, okay, yeah.
There must have been some legal reasons for that. I'm sure the lower court said, look, we sympathise and all that, but it's not our decision or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. Yeah. But anyway, looks like she's going to have that conviction quashed after whatever it is, almost 60
decades,
years.
Yeah. The Puerto Rico we're going to go to next, where a utility pole killed four horses.
Yeah, so this is one of these stories where people might be going, okay, four horses, very sad and all, but it hardly makes the grade for world news. But there's a bit more to it than just that. So the headline story here is that electric lines from a toppled utility pole killed four horses in central Puerto Rico. Obviously, they were electrocuted. That happened on Thursday. But what it's indicative of is problems that they're having in Puerto Rico with the power grid. I'm conscious of the fact that we've been talking about a lot of the same problems in Ireland with our problems with the power grid. So I thought we'd look at Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reasons for their problems are nothing to do with sure it'll be grandism. it's more to do with a hurricane that happened back in September of 2017. So this was Hurricane Maria that absolutely devastated the island and damaged the grid really beyond repair. And they're still suffering as a consequence, right? So they have regular blackouts there. They had a huge blackout on New Year's Eve. They had a huge blackout again where 90% of the country, I think, was out during Easter as well. So obviously, you know, people are very annoyed about that. It is a US territory, so you'd think it would have money, although it is relatively poor from what I understand. And the problem seems to be that the private company, a company called Luma, which took over the contract from the government in 2020, isn't operating as best it could be.
Yes.
Or at least that's what the government are saying here.
Yeah.
The local government are playing a very clever hand here and sort of saying, well, look, it's nothing to do with us. We'd love to get rid of them, even though they've only been there for 5 years. But it's not as easy as all that. And in fact, as in sort of emblematic of that, if you like, is they have actually brought a lawsuit against this private company, okay, for damages that were done to various appliances belonging to customers, right? So this is off the back of a statement that Luma made at a public hearing recently that they had rejected 1,828 claims from customers about their air conditioners, their dishwashers, toasters, whatever it might be, that broke as a result of these blackouts or the fluctuations in power. And so what the government seems to be doing is saying here, okay, well, we're on the side of the people, or at least we're distancing ourselves from any of the blame here, and we're going to sue the private company, let everybody know that it is very much the private company's fault, and we're going to take up this lawsuit. Now, how they're going to divvy out the various claims and pay, you know, Sean for air conditioning and Maggie for a dishwasher, yeah, or whatever it might be. I don't know how they're going to divvy it up.
And
but
is
it's
it known how many
tactic.
Of these claims that there are? Because so I imagine they're adding to them by the day.
Yeah, I'd say they are adding to them by the day. I mean, the last count, there was over 1,800 that the company said that they weren't going to pay. Now, that might be, maybe they have paid some compensation, I don't know, to others. But this is, again, in a public hearing, the company admitted that they had nearly 2,000 of these claims they weren't paying, and the government has said, right, well, we'll take up that, and we're gonna sue you.
And the the poll that killed the four horses, yeah, and presumably that person who owned the four horses could sue. These were just weakened by the hurricane, and I assume that's what the issue
this is.
Says.
What they're saying. Yeah. So this isn't the first time it happened. But something like this happened. There was a case back in 2018 where two people in their 60s died. Now that was you can kind of understand that because it was shortly after the hurricane.
Yeah.
But they're saying that, you know, since then, whoever is responsible for looking after the grid isn't doing their job, isn't doing it properly, and these accidents and incidents are as a result of that.
Okay, that's interesting. We'll see what the eventual outcome of that is. A Kenyan man has been released from death row after 14 years.
Yes, this is in Saudi Arabia. Mm. I don't think many people get released from death row here, but there is a way that you can do it, which is this blood money, of course.
Which is
possible in various different Muslim countries around the world. So this is called the dia, okay, which basically means that the perpetrator of a crime can pay the victim's family compensation, but the victim's family have to accept it, all right? And that seems to be what happened in this case, although it took 14 years of this man being in prison for it to happen. So the man in question was in his 20s. He's Stephen Munyako. He was in his 20s when he moved to Saudi Arabia about 14 or 15 years ago, right? Mm. So he was working in a resort there, and he got into an argument with a colleague of his from Yemen, and he used a letter opener to stab him, okay, and stabbed him to death. Now, initially, he was sentenced to 5 years for manslaughter, in fact, but then on appeal, that was upgraded to murder, and he was put onto death row. His mother is apparently a well-known journalist in Kenya, so she was able to use her position to sort of keep the candle lit, if you like, and keep his name in the press in Kenya. And various organisations got involved, and there was a lot of back and forth between the victim's family and herself. In the end, it appears the Kenyan government and a charity called the Muslim World League managed to get $1 million together to pay this dia, and he's been released, and it's been confirmed by the mother. So remarkable, after 14 years on death row and all of this back and forth, he has now been set free.
Yeah, and the person he killed was from
Yemen.
From Yemen, yeah. Right. Okay, and would they have been a migrant worker or something?
Yeah, two of them were. They were both working in a resort. I think the Kenyan fella, Stephen Munyako, was working in a warehouse there, something like that. Some sort of a dispute. Now, the mother always claimed that the Yemeni guy went at him first and he was defending himself. So that's the story there.
Yeah. Really, so. But the law seems to be that the victim's family can say, you can let him out now. They've just given us a load of money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's essentially what it is. And it's kind of been, it's a weird one because it's been abused in the past. There was a famous case back 10 or 12 years ago where a man killed his daughter, very young daughter, and he paid the wife compensation and she accepted it, inverted commas. You know, and so he was allowed out scot-free.
How is that a legal system at all, really? Right, Lithuania we're going to go to next. And Someone in Lithuania is calling for a shutdown of Polish language schools.
Yes, so there's a few Polish language schools in Lithuania, and this individual, Audrius Volotka, he's the chairman of the Lithuanian State Language Inspectorate, right? Now, it's their remit to protect the Lithuanian language, which you can understand given its history, sure. Right, that they have something like that. But in an interview earlier this month, he basically said that there should be no Polish and Russian schools at all. And he said, why do we have Polish schools in certain districts, of which I won't even try and pronounce? And like the reaction, as you can imagine, from representatives of Poland in the country was they were a bit shocked. So it's set off a bit of a diplomatic spat, as you can imagine. Now, luckily for this guy, it's happened when the parliament is on summer holidays. So he might get away with it with a smack on the wrist, but the Polish Charged Affairs in Vilnius has basically said that it was harmful and unjust and offensive to citizens of the Republic of Lithuania of Polish nationality. I'm sure he meant Polish ethnicity. Maybe he meant Polish nationality as well. And that it was contrary to the legal norms in the Republic of Lithuania, right? And you can imagine that it upset quite a few people from that group. There's about 180,000 people in Lithuania of Polish background, right?
Yeah, okay.
But not all of them go to these Polish schools, it should be said. In fact, only about 15,000 go. So it's a small amount that go to these Polish schools. But they are Polish language schools. They run the Lithuanian system through Polish. Some of them do sit the Polish state exam, I believe. And obviously this guy has overstepped the mark. So it was a bit insulting, as you can imagine.
Yeah, because you can understand why there would be a concern about Russian.
Yeah.
Given the history of, you know, the people deliberately being planted there sort of thing to kind of lodge out the native culture. But why do Poles even live in Lithuania? Is that just natural immigration?
It is. It's right on the border. So it's one of those situations where there's, you know, small pockets of them down in the south. And if you look at the map of Lithuania, it's right up against Belarus. So the Russians would be up in the northeast, right? And there's about 140,000 Russians live there. So it's about 6%, 6.5% of the population are Polish, about 5% are Russians.
Yeah.
No, I didn't see any statement from the Russians at this stage. On this statement from this state language inspector representative, but the Poles have come out and said, "Look, you need to watch what you say."
Yeah, right. India were. I love this story. They've arrested this guy who was running an embassy, but it wasn't really an embassy. Now, what various countries did he say he claimed to be representing?
Okay, so this is a real and finally story, if ever there was one. So this is a man by the name of Harshvardhan Jayan. He's a 47-year-old Indian. And he said that he was the ambassador to West Arctica. Okay, now West Arctica, I'm glad I actually looked into this a little bit further because it actually does exist, okay, as a micro nation, not a microstate. A microstate is recognized, so the Vatican or Monaco or whatever. A micronation just claims to exist but isn't recognized by anyone, right? It was basically bought or put together by this guy from the American Navy, a guy called Travis McHenry in the early 2000s. And he claims to be the king of that particular micronation. Anyway, this 47-year-old Indian back in 2016 gave a contribution to Travis McHenry and this particular country. And as a result of that significant and very generous contribution, he was offered the ceremonial title of Honorary Consul to India. Now, the organisation which was contacted after this guy was arrested have said that he was never granted powers of embassy, okay? But he took them on board, and it seems that he has duped an awful lot of people. He had this operation going for apparently 8 years, where he was issuing visas, setting up jobs in this place, West Arctica, and obviously getting money out of people and putting away in his bank. But when the police actually arrived at this rented accommodation that he's been renting out for the last 6 months, they found four cars with bogus plates on them, which said, you know,
Diplomatic plates.
Yeah, basically saying West Arctica or whatever it might be. And there was a West Arctica flag flying outside. So he wasn't hiding it. And obviously, he was kind of hiding in plain sight, really.
I read that he claimed to be a consul for Saborga as well.
Saborga, yes, I believe so. But I wasn't 100% sure of Saborga, which is, I think Saborga's been gone a long time.
Yeah,
if I'm not mistaken,
he moved on to a different micronation. But he did, because it looked like an embassy. The place he was in.
Yeah, the photos
had like fancy cars outside.
Four fancy cars, and they found $40,000 in cash. In Indian rupees and other foreign currencies and cash and all sorts of things. Apparently, he's made 162 trips around the world. I don't know if this is on some bogus passport that he has or just as a, you know, rocking up and saying, I'm the representative for West Arctica. But a massive scam. And I'm sure there's much more to be revealed.
Is there any explanation as to how he got away with it for so long?
Yeah.
That nobody went, that's not a real place.
I could say, but I don't want to sound a billion. People over the radio,
okay,
to be honest.
Fair enough. Right. So, what should we look out for over the next week or so?
So, there's a good few things to look out for. So, there's this ACJ judgment on Italy and Albania's asylum agreement that we were covering. Oh, we were covering it months ago. That's probably going on, 8 or 9 months at this stage. So, this is a big thing for Giorgia Meloni that she'll want to get across the line to see if it's legit. And then on Friday in the UK, ninja swords are going to be banned. So that ban is coming into effect, thank God. And then on the same day, the Edinburgh Fringe Festival is opening.
Okay.
So plenty going on.
Yeah, every comedian in the country would be over there. Jonathan, thanks a million.
Thanks, Sean.
As ever, Jonathan DeBurka Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.